I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. It's Friday, so we will go through our normal Friday format here. Next hour, we will have a False Flag Friday. We'll take a look at geopolitics around the world. A listener triggered me this week by including me in a group email of some of the worst neocon propaganda around. And I assume they sent it out to everybody with no comment because they agreed with it. This was some quite impressive anti-Iran propaganda. I rarely comment on these types of things, but I was, as I said, triggered, and I explained who the group was that put out this piece of anti-Iran propaganda, and I will explain it further when we get into False Flag Friday, as I am on a mission to break apart this neocon warmongering propaganda that the right continues to fall for, even though it's pushed by some of the worst people on the left as well. So my work here is not done when it comes to exposing the warfare state. Then we will finish up, as we always do on every Friday, with This Week on the Crazy Train. Of course, plenty of clips to play for that. Start off the show today, quotes of the day. This one, I don't know, I may disagree with it a tiny bit. Nietzsche said, "And once you are awake, you shall remain awake eternally." Now, there are certain things that people can see, and there is a process called awakening. I believe I had an awakening, formerly being a neocon, warmongering, Kool-Aid-drinking Republican, and then I started paying really attention to what the Republican Party was doing, like Medicare Part D and the endless wars. Started tracking the campaign donations, and so I started my process of awakening. Nietzsche says, "And once you are awake, you shall remain awake eternally." I'm not entirely sure of that. I've seen plenty of people that seem to go back to sleep. They awaken only to half of the story, depending on what side of the political aisle they're on. They can really only accept that the other side is capable of these nefarious things that you discover. Anyway, I hope that that's the case once you are awake. There are certain things you cannot unsee. This is one of the reasons I do 9/11 shows. If you can understand that at the very least, we were lied to about what took place on 9/11 and there was something funky about the collapse of the towers in New York City, that should give you pause to know what your government is capable of. And if you're not aware of what that is, you missed Tuesday's show, you can go find the podcast, The Mike Madison Show, and go listen to the second hour on Tuesday's show where I interviewed Andy Steele with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Anyway. One other quote of the day today. This is from Emiliano Zapata. He said, "I will die a slave of principles, not men." This is interesting. Joe Rogan has had Mark Zuckerberg on for, I guess, his latest podcast. And but wasn't really necessarily going to play this. I haven't heard the whole thing. I've just heard this clip, but I did want to play this clip, and then I'm going to play a clip from 1988, courtesy of Jameson Haygood. Thank you, Jameson, for forwarding it to me. But this is Mark Zuckerberg and Joe Rogan talking about, in particular, the Hunter Biden laptop story prior to the 2020 elections.
There's a lot of attention on Twitter during the election because of the Hunter Biden laptop story, the New York Post.
Yeah, we have that, too.
Yeah, so you guys censored that as well?
So we took a different path than Twitter.
I mean, basically the background here is the FBI, I think, basically came to us, some folks on our team. It was like, hey, just so you know, like, you should be on high alert. There was we thought that there was a lot of Russian propaganda in the 2016 election. We have it on notice that basically there's about to be some kind of dump that's similar to that.
I do want to remind everybody the implication. This is the FBI, of course, the FBI calling Facebook and going, hey, you know, there was a lot of Russian disinformation in the 2016 campaign. The only thing that was ever documented was there was, I believe it was about $60,000 worth of ads placed by some Russian group. I don't think it was ever even tied to the Russian government in any way, but about $60,000 worth of ads. How much do they spend on presidential elections here? $2 billion. $60,000 worth of ads from some Russian source. This is what the FBI was clutching pearls about and warned the Facebook about. Is it a coincidence that FBI and FB for Facebook are very similar? I think not.
So just be vigilant. So our protocol is different from Twitter's. What Twitter did is they said you can't share this at all. We didn't do that. What we do is we have if something is reported to us as potentially misinformation, important misinformation, we also have this third-party fact-checking program because we don't want to be deciding what's true and false.
Yeah, we outsource this to other nefarious groups.
And for the – I think it was 5 or 7
– you know, it's interesting. I'll pause this for a second. That's very interesting. That is, in practice, in theory, live time, plausible deniability. And what Facebook does is they go out and they find groups that they want to fact check a certain way, and they let them do the fact checking. And then Facebook goes, hey, look, it wasn't us. It wasn't us. We gave this to independent third party fact checkers. Now, we know that they feel exactly like we do, and they would recommend censoring exactly the same things that we want censored. But it's not us. It's fascinating to me. Fascinating to me. To people on the right who use Facebook. Now, I'm not mad at you or anything. It's just weird. As I say, I'm an observer. I'm interested in human behavior. Everybody knows how crooked Facebook is. They know this tilt of Facebook to wokeness and socialism and social justice and censorship. You know, all of these things, yet the right continues to just shovel money at them. It's interesting. That's all I'll say. Anyway, this third-party fact-checker, that is just an exercise you're hearing live time in plausible deniability. It wasn't us.
What we do is we have if something is reported to us as potentially misinformation, important misinformation, we also have this third-party fact-checking program because we don't want to be deciding what's true and false.
No.
And for the – I think it was 5 or 7 days when it was basically being determined whether it was false, the distribution on Facebook was decreased, but people were still allowed to share it. So you could still share it. You could still consume it.
So when you say the distribution is decreased,
it got shared.
How does that work?
It basically, the ranking in newsfeed was a little bit less.
A little bit. Just a tad.
Fewer people saw it than would have otherwise. So it definitely...
By what percentage?
I don't know off the top of my head, but It's meaningful. But
it's meaningful. 98%, 99%.
But I mean, but basically a lot of people were still able to share it. We got a lot of complaints that was the case. You know, obviously this is a hyper political issue, so depending on what side of the political spectrum, you either think we didn't censor it enough or censored it way too much, but we weren't sort of as black and white about it as Twitter. We just kind of thought, "Hey, look, if the FBI, which, you know, I still view as a legitimate institution in this country, it's like very professional law enforcement."
Of course, and they're partners. Doesn't the FBI have offices in Facebook and some of these Silicon Valley organizations?
Come to us and tell us that we need to be on guard about something, then I want to take that seriously.
Did they specifically say you need to be on guard about that story?
I don't remember if it was that specifically.
I don't recall.
But it basically fit the pattern.
When something like that turns out to be real, is there regret for...
Well, that's where the clip ends. But no. Well, why would there be regret? Have you seen the new mansion that Zuckerberg has built in Hawaii? Even the Hawaiians aren't happy about it. I think he's taking over large swaths of beach and buying neighbors' homes and destroying them or turning them into giant 5,000 square foot pet houses. No, Zuckerberg's doing absolutely fine. This is my question for the right, who every time you log into Facebook, it's just a cha-ching. The registers ring at Facebook, and yet the right, who understands that they are such a destructive force, continues to participate. I understand that that's where the battle is. I know, I've heard all the arguments. It's just weird. It's just it's kind of, to me, Facebook is a little bit like going to a restaurant where you know they spit in your food. But you just say, well, I know they spit in my food, but that's where everybody goes. I got to tell you, I find a restaurant that spits in my food. I don't really care who else has showed up there. I don't go back. I bring up this clip with Joe Rogan, where Mark Zuckerberg is explaining how the FBI called him and suppressed the Hunter Biden laptop story, a legitimate news story prior to the 2020 elections, because it ties well into this clip from 1988. 1988, going to take you back to the 80s. It's about 35 years ago. Then again, thank you to Jameson Haygood for sending me this clip of the 1988 version of the great Ron Paul.
You know, most of our history, we didn't have those institutions. The FBI came in during the First World War, and interestingly enough, one thing that Woodrow Wilson did, he used the FBI to spy on American citizens and actually arrest them if they disagreed with his foreign policy about going to war in Europe. And isn't it interesting how recent they used it in the Vietnam era? Democrats used it there. Republicans used the FBI to spy on 100 different groups in this country, including the churches, who disagree with the policy in Central America. It almost looks like the FBI was designed to spy on Americans who might be disagreeing with policy, especially the foreign policy. So the FBI, although I don't think I can condemn everything they've ever done, because I'm sure some of the investigations and investigation of crime has been beneficial, but that could be accomplished through Justice Department within our states. We wouldn't reject that portion of it. But I think the FBI has kept and continues to keep a lot of records on a lot of individuals. The CIA has only been here since 1947. Their record is lousy. I mean, just think of the CIA used by the Democratic administration to...
Yeah, 1988. So 35 years ago about. So I did the calculations, and I figured that this show may be understood in and around somewhere 2057. Nah, I guess I've got that to look forward to. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know?
She was with her. I am struggling with the flow of the show today, trying to figure out what I want to put where. I've got some very interesting a news story to tell you what the Ukraine war is about. I might save that for next hour, or maybe it'll be my transition at the end of this hour. But while we're talking about the FBI real quick, as people are understanding the corruption, I mean, the FBI at the upper levels, again, I've known FBI agents, some really top-shelf guys. I know police officers, top-shelf people. The problem is these organizations are there to enforce. They are law enforcement. And what is a law? As I keep saying, it's a bunch of politicians and bureaucrats getting together and deciding rules and regulations for the rest of us. And these organizations are sent out to just enforce these. At least the drug war is going well. This was the U.S. Department of State issued an advisory warning Americans about an increased risk of kidnapping when going to Mexico amid heightened cartel violence in several areas. State Department said on Wednesday, quote, violent crime such as homicide, kidnapping, carjacking, and robbery is widespread and common in Mexico. U.S. citizens are advised to adhere to restrictions on U.S. government employee travel, state-specific restrictions. So several Mexican states were marked under the, quote, do not travel, unquote, section in the State Department bulletin due to crime and the risk of kidnapping, including Sinaloa, Colima, Guerrero, several other places I don't want to try to pronounce. And so they are warning Americans don't travel to Mexico. Now, from reading the story, and I don't have time to go in the whole thing, I didn't see anything that said that the people at Jose Cuervo or the Corona brewing facilities, they aren't responsible for all this horrific crime. It's the drug cartels. And where did they get all this money for all of these weapons? And why don't these drugs, when they have disputes, why do they kidnap and murder and unleash me? Why don't they just go to court and settle it civilly, just like any other? Oh, that's right, because we forced it into a black market where all of the violence exists. So the drug war, another giant success of the drug war. Mexico is a no-go zone now. Congratulations to all you drug warriors out there. You have allowed a complete narco state to our south to provide what will always be provided to the United States, which is illegal drugs. Prohibition does not work. When it comes to that as well, you know, I draw a little heat here, some condemnation. People might have run away from my show because I am not I back law enforcement every single time anything happens ever. Yesterday, I was going through Jackson. I saw Ridgeland PD flying into Jackson down State Street. About a dozen cars, lights flashing, sirens going about 100 miles an hour down the center line. And I said, oh, we got another chase, you know. There's no problem with that. There were some predators on the loose, and the cops were wrangling them in. That's fine. Absolutely fine. The predators among us, as a libertarian, if you steal people's stuff or you hurt people, you deserve to be in a cage, out of society, off the streets. It's the rest of the stuff that the police are tasked with, and I just thought this was an interesting story, because I'm going to get to a part of it that really shows you why I think it's so gross. Police were dispatched to an Ohio city, not for a robbery or a murder, but for an 8-year-old girl selling lemonade without a permit. Asa Baker is an 8-year-old girl from Ohio with an overwhelming entrepreneurial spirit. Over the hot summer, rather than spend her days inside watching TV, Asa would set up a lemonade stand in her front yard to make some cash. It's fun and you get lots of people, that's what she told Fox 8 News. In an interview, adding that lots of truckers stop by and pay more than the $1 per cup that she charges. Especially on a country road, I get a lot of people. Unfortunately for Asa, however, her summer entrepreneurial spirit would come to a grinding halt when police shut down her stand for the crime of selling lemonade without a permit. Earlier this month, Asa had her first experience with the state's iron fist when she set up her stand at her father's business downtown. Everything was cleared with the property owner, and she had permission to be there during the town's annual rib and food festival. She was in an alleyway about a half block from the festival, and business was good until police showed up. Asa said when she saw a police officer walking up to her stand, she thought she was going to buy a cup of lemonade, but that was not his mission. Instead of encouraging the little girl's business acumen in the lemonade realm, he was there to shut her down. Asa had not paid the government for the privilege of selling lemonade from private property, and it was the cop's job to enforce the law. Now, the story goes on, and this is where I think it gets really sick, where I actually have some sympathy for police who were tasked to go do this, but there's a very familiar defense for shutting down a little girl's lemonade stand because she had not genuflected to the local authorities. Highlighting the sentiment behind the, quote, just doing my job mentality, this officer actually had a conscience and was upset that he had to shut down Asa's stand, but he still shut it down. Asa, the little girl, said, well, they were really sad that they had to shut me down, but they gave me $20 to try to and pay for it. This is Asa's mother said, I could definitely tell he did not want to shut her down, but I mean, you get a call, he has to do it. So this is the problem. What you have to understand is I am all for law enforcement taking predators off the street. Absolutely all for that. The problem is that when you have, when the state has a monopoly on violence and kidnapping, which is exactly what grabbing somebody up for a victimless crime and throwing them into a cage is, this blanket support, particularly from the right, for years and years, we've allowed our police to just end up being Praetorian guards for city councils and mayor's offices, federal government, it doesn't matter, FBI, local PD, whatever. And it is this this cop didn't want to do this, but he did, didn't he? And I had a story not long ago that I ran across in my notes the other day. So Mississippi sheriff said, they don't want to enforce gun restriction laws, but if they're on the books, they'll do it. That was at like the Mississippi Sheriff's Association meeting several months ago. As we know, gun control is being talked about. The sheriff said, well, we don't want to, but we will. This is the problem. I'll be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I did want to bring up one other policing story. And then I'm going to get you back on my side. Just hang on a second. Police were dispatched to a Silicon Valley school to remove a four-year-old who just could not abide by wearing a mask. The child was inconsolable and being forced to gag themselves in a dirty face mask. Ineffective face mask to protect him from a disease that doesn't affect him in the first place. This four-year-old child, smarter than the school administration and the police, who escorted him from the campus. Now, I'm sure that's another case where no police officer, no self-respecting police officer wants to be dispatched to a elementary school, to a kindergarten, to escort a four-year-old off the campus, but they were told to do it. So they did it. I'm just saying. As I said, this show will resonate in about 2057. We'll look back and go, boy, he was kind of right. The governments tend to use their enforcement arm pretty horrifically here in the United States. Unless you think that governments at all levels are getting more benevolent and kind and sweet as the years go by. Okay, I'm going to get you back on my side now. I ran across a couple of clips and led me into a thing. How's the vaccination program working out for us? We're going to take a look at that. There's several stories. Try to kind of put these into a compilage. Again, it's the flow of the show. That's my goal. This was on the news just a couple of days. It's one of the things that should get our ears perked up a little bit.
There's new data tonight showing overall life expectancy here in the U.S. falling in all 50 states. The CDC reporting a drop by 1.8 years from 2019 to 2020, falling from 78.8 to 77 years. New York State seeing the largest decline by 3 years, D.C. falling 2.7 years, Hawaii with the highest life expectancy in the country. The decline, of course, blamed on the pandemic and the rise on fatal drug overdoses in this country.
Couldn't be anything else. It's got to be just those things right there. Pay no attention to any other thing that could possibly be making more people sick and dying. Now, that's local news. By the way, I believe Mississippi has the worst life expectancy in the country. I'm just saying, for those who listen to the Wednesday health show, you're probably going to outlive most of your buddies. We have to go across great distances, across great oceans to go to New Zealand, and they're scratching their heads over something as well. Something is going on to New Zealand, if only they could figure this out.
Are you sick of being sick? You're not imagining it. More Kiwis are coughing, sniffling, and calling off work.
Our immunity against a whole lot of things is sort of a little bit down because we haven't been constantly, I feel like, primed all the time. Because of course, we've got lots and lots of different viruses coming over. And it's not just the coronavirus. Of course, lots of things are.
Seasonal flu, gastro bugs, conjunctivitis, even foot and mouth. It's all making everyone's lives just that much harder. And that's despite COVID numbers finally going down. Community cases are at their lowest since February. But data reported in stuff.co.nz suggests compared to last year, respiratory illnesses have doubled. Huh. The Well Kiwis survey found double the number of us are experiencing cough, fever, illness, runny nose, and sore throats. And when
it's almost like their immune systems are impaired. You know what I mean? I mean, they're twice as sick as they were last year with everything else, not COVID. Bunch of respiratory disease. It's like something has happened. Must be climate change. Something has happened to the Kiwis They're not able to fight off diseases that they usually don't even notice.
Looking at pre-pandemic levels, we're actually 7 times sicker.
Huh. 7 times sicker in New Zealand than they were pre-pandemic.
So what's going on?
If we haven't learned anything from this pandemic, it would be a bit disappointing. And one of those things is that when you've got a cold or something like that, don't take it to work. We know what stops viruses from spreading. And so masking up and keeping a distance isn't just about COVID.
Here's the flaw in the logic here. Pre-pandemic, the Kiwis were not masking up. People would go to work with a cold. I mean, if anything, they're more hyper-vigilant about going to work now with the sniffles or a cough or a day after a fever or whatever. They would be more cautious now, yet they're 7 times sicker. Back in 2019, they weren't masking up, and they were 7 times less sick.
About, you know, all sorts of respiratory viruses.
And it's not just the experts who've noticed.
Yeah, there has been a few more days off, for sure.
Our daughter's gone to kindergarten this year, so yeah, it's a bit unusual. It's hard to say, but she's, yeah, we've been sick out as a family, yeah.
But I know a lot of my friends have been sick.
It's the worst flu I've maybe ever had in my life. So definitely worse. I don't think it's my immune system because I've been trying to be healthier than usual.
So what can you do to avoid all the nasties without having to live in your own personal lockdown?
Well, I can give you a hint. Don't take the damn boosters. Good Lord. They're 7 times sicker in New Zealand than they were pre-pandemic. Going across the oceans again, we get this from the UK.
Let's talk about excess deaths, because it's always an interesting subject. You've been looking at some of the figures that have been coming out recently compared to the sort of COVID years. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, so let's start with just explaining what excess deaths are. So you can look at how many people are dying in a particular week of the year or the total year overall, and then have a look at, well, how many people were dying in previous years. Now, we tend to cut out 2020 and 2021 when we look at these comparisons, Mike, because we did see the COVID pandemic kind of put a step change in all the figures. So they're a bit abnormal from what you would expect. So you can look at 2015 to 2019 and then compare what we're seeing now. And 2022, Mike, has been a tale of two halves. The first half of the year, we were seeing deaths generally across the country below average for the time of year. And don't forget, we saw big rises in 2020, 2021, not unexpected because people obviously who may have tragically died earlier on in the pandemic may have been dying now. So that was the first half of the year. Then week 15 hit. And what we've seen since then is the number of deaths above average creeping up and up and up. And they've been kind of running above average now for about 15, 16 weeks. And this is across a range of different age groups, because if we look at it by age group, we've got 10 to 14-year-olds, they're 11.7% above average. We've got 30 to 34-year-olds, 11% above average. 35 to 39-year-olds, they're 12.5% above average. You've got double-digit above average in the 55 to 59, 60 to 64-year-olds. The biggest increase above average, Mike, is the 75 to 79-year-olds now. One thing to treat with caution when you look at that figure is with a large number of births after the Second World War, last couple of years, a large number of those have crept over into that 75 to 79 age group. So you've got more of them than what we had in the last, say, 5 or 6 years. So that's explaining it. But the Department of Health have been citing some reasons for this, Mike, saying circulatory diseases, which include heart issues and diabetes. So they could be some of the factors at play in terms of these excess deaths.
Yeah. Once again, so excess deaths in the UK. Edward Dowd, he is the hedge fund guy who crunches numbers. He's here in the U.S. I believe his statistic was 84% increased mortality here in the United States of working-aged people. These were younger people, I believe, somewhere between 18 and 54, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but it's pretty substantial. It certainly seems that these shots may be harming the immune system. And it may just be for some people. Here's the really sick thing, is that there may be some kind of like a genetic marker involved in who might have a bad outcome from these particular shots. And maybe some people aren't harmed. Now, we don't know. You know, sometimes when you get on the side of being suspicious of these shots, concerned about these shots, against any kinds of mandates or an experimentation on the mass of humanity, you go kind of overboard and say it's going to kill everybody. We don't know that. I certainly hope that's not the case. But the sad thing is that Because I know a lot of people who've gotten the shots and they seem fine. If they were only looking. The problem is that when somebody goes to the doctor and says, hey, I've got this, or someone comes in and they've had a stroke or something abnormal for their age group or their previous health, and they don't ask them, well, did you get the shot? Okay, well, we'll mark you down. Maybe it's people with a certain blood type. The problem is that the medical community in the United States, and it sounds like probably most places in the world, New Zealand and England and Germany and everyone else too, they're refusing to look at it. They are actually actively trying not to learn who might have a side effect from this shot. Wouldn't it be great if maybe the shots were perfectly safe for a large contingent of the population, but if you're an AB blood type or you have this genetic marker, it looks like there may be some danger. They would have already discovered that by now, but they're not looking. They refuse to look. They refuse to even acknowledge there's a problem with these shots. And so the people that are harmed, if they are some small select group with some particular genetic marker or something else that does not work well. Now, I don't think these shots are good for anybody because they're ineffective. They don't stop the spread. They don't stop the contracting the disease. I don't think they're a net positive for anybody. And if you listen to New Zealand, they're 7 times sicker than they were previous pandemic. So I don't think they're good for anybody, but for the people that have catastrophic outcomes from these shots, if only the medical community wasn't hiding from the data, actively trying to not collect data, they might actually figure out who might be well advised to steer clear of these shots. But I ran across this story when it comes to harming the immune system, and I wanted to take a look at this. When I first saw this story, obviously my spidey senses went off. This was a headline, man tests positive for COVID-19, monkeypox, and HIV all at once. And when I first saw this, I started thinking, it certainly looks like these shots are impairing people's immune systems, at least pretty large group of people. If the New Zealanders are 7 times more sick than they were pre-pandemic, then it does mean that it's probably affecting a lot of people. So I started looking at this and I thought, well, you know, good Lord, this guy's immune system has completely checked out. Let's go look at this story and see if he's gotten the shots. Of course he has. But then I started to temper myself because as I was reading through the story, I thought, well, look, Mike, maybe this isn't a good case to bring to the show, being suspicious of it, because he has HIV. If you have HIV, you've got a compromised immune system. So if somebody has HIV going into monkeypox season, and this is a gay dude, then obviously he may contract COVID and monkeypox because he already had HIV and this was compromising his immune system. But that wasn't the way this worked out. The patient had been treated for syphilis in 2019 and suffered from bipolar disorder. He had been vaccinated with 2 doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine in 2021 and had contracted the virus in January of 2022. So he got the shots. He got COVID. And it says serology tests that were conducted for viral hepatitis, herpes simplex, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and some other thing, LGV, after he was admitted to the hospital, turned negative. But he did test positive for HIV-1 with a viral load of 234,000 copies per milliliter of blood, which is considered high. So this guy got the shots. He got the shots in 2021. He contracted COVID in January of 2022, and since then, he now also has monkeypox and HIV. He's got the trifecta. This seems to be, it looks like these shots are impairing the human immune system. The guy's got all 3 things now. And you stack that on top of the idea that in New Zealand, they are 7 times sicker. That's right, 7 times sicker. You were sick once a year in 2019 in New Zealand as a New Zealander, a Kiwi. You're now sick 7 times a year in New Zealand, essentially. or for those friends of yours in your friend group, seven times as many sicknesses. And we know that New Zealand was one of these that was treated to rapid rounds, forced rounds of this genetic experiment. It does not seem like it's working well. Meryl Nass, she's a physician and researcher. She's put out a little piece, too. It's interesting about the human nature aspect. This is what I'm fascinated by. During COVID, we saw people do really bizarre things since COVID, and particularly around this vaccination program, we're seeing people do some weird mental tricks to try to justify still masks and the shots and everything else. She's kind of explored that, and I thought she had a kind of an interesting piece about the human nature of this. She's a physician. She's been speaking out against this mass experimentation on humanity, and we'll read her piece when we come back. Stick around.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
The mRNA shots have been the most deadly shots ever administered. Even if the numbers of people within the, I mean, that's like 200 million Americans that have gotten jabs. The numbers as a percentage, as reported at least, are quite small. We all know plenty of people who went out and got shots and they seem to be fine. It's still, that doesn't matter for the statistic of the most deadly shots ever. Now we are learning what many of these virologists, vaccinologists, these are people who have worked for like the WHO and the Gates Foundation. They were sounding the alarm bells at the very beginning of this thing saying, we don't know long term on this. This could impair the human immune system. They were warning about this from the very beginning. And when you listen to some of the stories I'm covering today, you see it seems like people are getting sicker. And these are in heavily vaccinated countries. Of course, as I say, they won't collect the data, so we don't really know. The weird thing about human nature is there are some things too big to consider. People will put up a wall, a true denial. They will refuse to consider these things. And I would imagine there's a lot in the medical community that cannot for a second even entertain the idea that they might have been recommending something to their patients that would horribly harm them. They can't allow it in. I feel like that's very dishonest and it's very gross, but it may be that so many people are just susceptible to this idea that if something is so bad, I can't even let it in. This is from Meryl Nass. She's a physician. She got canned, her license suspended for prescribing COVID medications, and she was charged with, of course, misinformation. She writes this. Multiple papers now suggest that COVID mRNA vaccines impair not just immunity to COVID, but immunity and immune surveillance overall. Implication is that the vaxxed are more susceptible to a variety of infections and perhaps also to cancer. Immune surveillance is what identifies cancer cells and kills them before they can proliferate. So you are vaccinated. The implications of this information are too frightening to be allowed into consciousness. You don't need the external sensors to suppress the knowledge. You do it automatically with your built-in defense mechanisms. Her second point here, number two, data from multiple countries now shows that all-cause mortality, deaths from everything, are higher in the vaccinated. She says this is just as scary, if not more so, than an increased risk of serious infection and cancer. You deny and or suppress this information because it simply cannot be allowed to be true. Number three, you vaccinated your child. This may have impaired their fertility, increased their cancer risk, etc., etc., etc. Of all pieces of information that are absolutely cannot be allowed to enter your consciousness, let alone be openly discussed in polite company, this one tops all. So you will simply refuse to allow mention of it. Friends whose conversations veer off in this direction must be obliterated. Requiring that all family members and friends be vaccinated protects you from facing those for whom this discussion does not trigger the existential and uncontrollable pain it does for the vaccinated. And voila. You have a controlled and cowed population who have become their own thought police. Now, this is a very interesting thing. I talk a lot on this show. I have some sympathy for victims of everything, victims of propaganda. And it's everywhere. It's in the social justice movement. young people have it, you know, when it came to COVID, the people wearing masks are actually, while I look at them and say, have you not figured this out yet? I do. I question their intelligence when I see them. But I have to understand they're victims of an orchestrated fear campaign. I say the same thing to people who continue to fight the war on drugs. You're still living with the Reefer Madness movie of 1953 or whenever that thing was released. People, they use fear to control you, and some people are just more susceptible to it. It's just interesting that we cannot even admit it to ourselves. This also goes with the 9/11 story, and to all the people on the right who judge everybody on the left who's bought in whole cloth to this vaccine program and to the COVID fear-mongering, I remind you that you applauded George W. Bush for passing the Patriot Act and handing over a bunch of your constitutional rights because the government used the same tactics on you. There's a terrorist behind every Bush. Fear is very effective to get people to do things they would not ordinarily do. And so these people are victims of this fear campaign. One thing I'll touch on real quick in about the last minute I've got, because you have to go across the ocean again, the Irish Times has got a story out. Insufficient vitamin D linked to fourfold increase in risk of death among COVID-19 patients. Irish researchers find unvaccinated patients with low vitamin D levels are more likely to suffer severe disease and death. Of course, Ireland is a home to big pharmaceutical companies, and so they're still carrying that. But it's just interesting. They've got a story out now about the tremendous benefits to your health outcomes when it comes to COVID. And I'll just tell you, I've been telling you for almost 6 years now on the health show, vitamin D protects you from a whole lot of different things. And we have a chronic vitamin D deficiency in this country. But the Irish Times is reporting, hey, and I believe down in this story, something like a sevenfold death rate for people with low vitamin D levels. They could have saved a whole lot of people with just getting them to take a $5 a month supplement that had positive side effects like increased mood and resistance to other diseases as well. Overall health could have been improved during COVID, but they suppressed it. At least the Irish Times is talking about it now. When we come back, Ball Swag Friday.
Yeah! What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Friday. Every Friday, we start talking about foreign policy at 10 o'clock in a False Flag Friday where I try to explain to people, you've been hoodwinked into these wars. They're based on lies and profit-taking. I'm going to explain a little bit about the Ukraine war today. It's interesting news coming out and how you're going to be paying for the Ukraine war. And I'm not talking about the tens of billions of dollars we seem to be sending over there just about on a weekly basis now. I'm talking about you're about to be paying it in the bills that you pay. Quote of the day, it's paragraph, but it's a guy named Phil Butler wrote this. This might trigger some people. Trigger warning. Phil Butler wrote this. He said, "May I just spit it out? We are the terrorists. Americans are the terrorists creating tremendous suffering and tragedy around the world. And no, I'm not the only one admitting to this. Deep down, all of my fellow citizens know that what we are about. A recent incident in Yemen drives home the hegemony my country has created, one that has looted and still loots the whole world." Listen to him. He's anti-America. Look, this isn't us, but those of you who support this kind of stuff, and I'm going to show you in just a second, a listener really triggered me by forwarding on some neocon propaganda. What he's talking about in this is an ex-Yemeni foreign minister, Abu Bakr al-Qurbi, told reporters the other day that the French Foreign Legion has arrived in Yemen's Shabwa province to secure control of the Balhaf gas facility. They said the French are making preparations to export gas from this Balhaf facility. And what that means is this is French doing this, but the United States has been providing logistics support, bombs, weapons, supporting the Saudi genocide on the Yemeni people who have done absolutely nothing to us. I know a lot of people are outraged about the student loan stuff, and I am too. But if we can get a tiny bit of context, just a tiny bit, I mean, if we're going to list the things that I hate to see taxpayer money being spent on, everyone's saying, well, why am I paying for somebody else's college education? I totally agree with you. You're right. It's a horrific plan, and hopefully it's struck down, even though my son would be a beneficiary. But Any opposition to the fact that you are also paying for bombs to be dropped on countries that did absolutely nothing to the United States and no way, shape, or form were ever a threat to you, me, or the continental United States? Anybody at all upset about the trillions of dollars that have been used to wreck countries around the world? I don't want to be paying $10,000 of a bunch of people's student loans. Nobody should. But if we can get a tiny bit of perspective on that, it might rank lower than the $8 trillion we've spent in the Middle East to bomb countries that did nothing to us. So now, with the complicity of the French, we have cleared the way for them to go in and loot the gas resources of Yemen, the poorest country in the Middle East, exactly the same way that we are currently seizing the Syrian oil fields. This was Donald Trump on his way out. He said, "We're getting out of Syria, but we're keeping the oil." And there's more on that story, too. U.S. soldiers have now been injured in the encampments in Syria where we are, air quotes here in the studio, guarding the oil. No, we're stealing the oil. That is a war crime. And it was done under the Trump administration and is continuing under the Biden administration. As a matter of fact, some hostilities are actually going on right now between us and the Syrian government and Russia. Because of where we've left troops there to steal the Syrian oil. Well, the French are about to step in, too. Obviously, some oil company has made the right contributions, and they are going to be taking the Yemeni oil. This is the piece of propaganda that somebody forwarded to me, and I'm sorry, John, but you triggered me. So this came into my... How much would Iran benefit financially from a nuclear deal? Conservatives, as I say... You've been hoodwinked so many times into so many wars, and to the great credit of Donald Trump, he woke up a lot of the right to the endless wars. He gave you cover. You probably knew, particularly as a Christian or something, maybe we shouldn't just be wholesale just bombing nations and overthrowing their governments when they have not attacked us. But you felt like it was your patriotic duty to support the troops somehow meant supporting every war. Donald Trump came in and gave everybody cover to say these wars in the Middle East are insane. I think that is the single greatest accomplishment of Donald Trump's presidency. However, he tempered that by saying, well, except Iran. We need to continue to face off with Iran, another country that's done nothing to us. They have problems with some of their neighbors, but we insert ourselves. So listener had forwarded this to a group of people. How much would Iran benefit financially from a nuclear deal? Year one, $131 billion of access to foreign reserves. $72 billion in oil revenue, $60 billion in non-oil revenue, and $12 billion in lower import costs. And they total it up on this little graphic, $275 billion. That's just in year one. How much would Iran benefit? And so the subtext of this is, we need to keep our knee on the throat of another sovereign country half a world away that's done nothing to us. And how tragic would it be, according to this group, and I'm going to tell you who this group is in just a second, how tragic would it be if Iran suddenly got oil revenue? It has oil. It'd like to sell its oil. We've been trying to stop them from selling their oil. And what a tragedy it would be if this sovereign country was actually able to sell its own natural resources. That's the pretext of this. But it gets worse. This neocon group that is constantly hoodwinking, particularly conservatives, but liberals are on board with this stuff too now. Barack Obama convinced the left that war was cool. Well, we just dropped love and peace bombs by the start of 2030. $131 billion access to foreign reserves. $507 billion of oil revenue. $365 billion non-oil revenue, meaning trade. This sovereign country, half a world away, might actually be able to do some trade if we do an Iran deal with them. Oh my gosh, how horrific. We can't allow another country to engage in commerce with everybody else. And $72 billion in lower import costs, over $1 trillion. This is this anti-Iran hysteria. Who sent this out? The FDD. Does anybody know who the FDD is? I would imagine most people who shared this graphic, thinking it makes you look tough, that this is all about how we need to face off with Iran, doesn't understand what the FDD is. That's the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And if you want to go to the site, I don't have time to flesh the whole thing out. If you want to go to the site and look at who the Foundation of for the Defense of Democracies is, you'll find it's basically just a group to support Israel and Saudi Arabia. This is a warmongering neocon group that is infested with people like, this is what conservatives are now falling for, what's the guy's name? General Michael Hayden. Do you know who General Michael Hayden is? He's on the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He is the former CIA director who just recently said that Trump should be tried and executed for treason. No, excuse me, espionage, in light of the Mar-a-Lago raids. So conservatives are actually forwarding around a piece by the Foundation for Defense of Democracies that carries water for people like Michael Hayden, who actually wants Trump executed for espionage. Another person that's in this Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, there's a lot of people, names that you won't recognize. These are the deep state people, the unnamed bureaucracies and think tanks that lead you into these endless wars for their own profit, not yours. Another name on this was Leon Panetta. He's in the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's against the nuclear deal. Who is Leon Panetta, if you don't know his name? I think he might have been, he's chief of staff or secretary of state for Bill Clinton. He was the head of the Defense Department under Barack Obama. Another horrific partisan Democrat as they go out and do this. But this thing will be littered with people who consider themselves conservatives, too. These are neocons. And I'm, as I say, you can tell by the tone of my voice and the time I'm spending on this one little graphic that was forwarded around conservative circles, I'm sick of watching y'all fall for the propaganda. Iran is none of our business. Had we not overthrown their government in 1953 in Operation Ajax, they probably would be a Western-style democracy. They were in 1953. Problem was, they wanted control of their own natural resources, and so they kicked out the Western oil players. And the United States launched an operation to overthrow that nationalist government. Aren't we all nationalists here now? Don't conservatives talk about nationalism, that we, America first? Well, in 1953, Mossadegh was the president of Iran. He was an Iran firster for Iran. He was educated in England. They had basically a Western-style democracy. Go back and look at pictures of 1950s Iran. And the problem is, he was an Iran first guy, and he thought that the oil resources of their country should be used for the benefit of the Iranian people, not for big globalist oil companies. So he kicked them out and he took control of his own natural resources. And for that, we sent him packing. We installed the Shah, and the Shah was so brutal with his death squads and everything in that country for a period of time that eventually they had the Muslim uprising of 1979. Had we not orchestrated that first thing in 1953, yet conservatives will say, yeah, that war in Iraq was a mistake. That thing in Afghanistan, we shouldn't be doing that. We don't need to be fighting all these wars except Iran. We need to keep facing off with Iran. Quit believing this war propaganda and leave these countries alone. I know that is tough. This is just like the piece I read about the vaccines for people who've been vaccinated. They can't allow these things in to their minds. And there's so many conservatives out there who believe you can't change. Even if I tell you, you've got a bunch of deep state people in this Foundation for the Defense of Democracies that is opposing the Iran nuclear deal. You just can't let it in. But Trump told us Iran was bad. This is just another piece of this war propaganda and the villainization of another country for those people. And I'll show you how this works when I come back. When it comes to the Ukraine war, interesting money being made in the natural gas markets now. We'll see who's the beneficiary. I'll be right back. Dan called during the break, made a good point. I guess I need to say this every time. I've done this before, but for people maybe haven't heard me before. You hear neocon and you think that's new conservative, neoconservative. I don't even know what conservative really means anymore because it's all over the map. I think all these political labels of liberals and progressives and all the I think these labels are about worthless. But a neocon, a neoconservative, has nothing to do with political affiliation. These neocons are they're warmongers. They believe that the world should be set up according to our rules. These are the interventionists all around the world, and they are Republicans and Democrats. Hillary Clinton is one of the biggest neocon warmongers, pieces of human refuse that walks the planet. So understand, this is not a, I'm not bashing Republicans or people on the right when I call out neocons. Neocons have no party. They want money and power, and they are from all parties and all walks of life. Black, white, young, old, Democrat, Republican. They are everywhere. They are the neocons. I think people are starting to kind of understand this concept, but Dan's right. I should probably explain it a little bit better. When it comes to Ukraine, this story popped up, and I just thought it was interesting. Climbing natural gas prices could force U.S. to slash imports to Europe. We know Europe is just, they've cut off their natural gas supplies from Russia because, you know, everything Russia in is bad now. Essentially, the story is that NATO provokes Russia for 30 years and Russia finally responds and the West clutches at pearls and says it's just this is a, you know, an unbelievable aggressive act. It is NATO that provoked this. Notwithstanding the overthrow, the U.S. overthrow of the Ukrainian government in 2014. It's like World Trade Center 7. Most people don't know that part either. They don't know about the overthrow of Iran in 1953. They don't know about the overthrow of Ukraine in 2014. All American operations. They just look at what's happening today and just think it's this crazy other world leader just acting, woke up one day and had a bad hair day and lashed out at the world. But this story about natural gas is just interesting to me because even during Donald Trump's term, Donald Trump was constantly telling the Europeans, you know, why are we paying to defend you from Russia? And then you're doing oil and gas deals with Russia. You can't be dependent on Russia for your oil and natural gas. We'll give you everything you need. How's that working out for them? Energy prices over in Europe have already gone up, I think, 80%, at least one thing. They're saying another 50% is coming and then another 50% at the beginning of next year. And now it turns out that natural gas prices are spiking. Here's how you're going to pay for the war in Ukraine. You. When you see your heating bills go up this winter, understand this is you're paying for it. I know we're sending tens of billions of dollars from the U.S. Treasury, too. A lot of this money is just printed up and robbed from you every Friday. But when you see spiking natural gas prices here, understand this is because the United States told Europe, hey, we'll give you all the natural gas you need. It turns out we can't. So supply is scarce. So the prices are going up. Natural gas prices in the United States hit the highest level in 14 years this week, with the Henry Hub benchmark temporarily topping $10 per million British thermal units, BTUs. U.S. gas liquefied and transported to the LNG import terminals in Europe has been instrumental in filling up Europe's gas storage caverns ahead of schedule. At the same time, it has highlighted Europe's vulnerability in the gas supply department. Then we had an outage here, and they're talking about the record prices. Look, if Europe's going to pay a high price for this because it's scarce and they desperately need it, they are in trouble for this winter right now as it stands. Unless they regain their senses and reestablish connections with Russia and buying natural gas, Europeans across the continent are in big trouble this winter. They're already telling them, you're going to be cold. You're going to be cold this winter. But if they're willing to pay high prices to get the liquid natural gas over there, you think American companies are going to go, no, we're going to keep it home here and sell it to our people for cheap instead of making big money selling it to you. My point being, even when Donald Trump was out there hawking this idea that you need to cut yourself off from Russian natural gas and you need to get it all from us, we can take care of you. That's what Trump said. It was because I would suspect, and I'd have to go back and look to document this, but all of these people, I mean, it wasn't just Trump. It was certainly people in Congress. Everybody's had this Russian hysteria. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, Nancy Pelosi, all of them. I would imagine the U.S. liquid natural gas exporters have probably been lining the pockets of our Congress critters. as Donald Trump was out trying to cut off Russia from the European markets just through rhetoric at the time, but he was also providing lethal weapons to the Ukrainian government to attack ethnic Russians in Ukraine, which helped lead us to the war in the first place. But as Donald Trump was out there selling U.S. liquid natural gas to Europe, I would imagine he probably got some contributions. U.S. This is a story as of just March of this year that I ran across. This is from a Reuters story. U.S. liquid natural gas exporters emerge as big winners of Europe nat gas crisis. And it goes through all of these companies. The most notable is it Cheniere? C-H-E-N-I-E-R-E, Cheniere Energy. It's the largest U.S. exporter. They've signed numerous long-term deals to sell liquid natural gas in recent months. They are knocking the cover off the ball. You want to know why there's a war in Ukraine right now? Why there's been all the hysteria about Russia selling, which makes perfect logical sense if you look at a globe. Russia's got a ton of natural gas, and they're a few miles away from Germany and from Europe. We're half a world away, a huge ocean away, and we're telling them, no, that wouldn't be good to buy it through a pipeline that's already been built, ready to just ship it to you. We're only a few miles away from Russia. That doesn't make any sense. What makes sense is to buy it from American firms who have to load it up, truck it across or train it across the country, load it into terminals, ship it across the Atlantic, put it into your terminals, and then get it into Europe. That makes a hell of a lot more sense, right? That sounds more efficient than just cutting on a pipeline from Russia straight into Europe. This is about energy dominance by oil and gas companies. That's why they tried to get Russia cut off, not because they thought Russia was some threat to Germany, to Germany and to Europe. Russia wasn't going to make a move to take over Germany. This is why NATO should have been disbanded back in 1990. But they keep these things up so these energy companies can do really, really well. And boy, they have created the perfect crisis for our liquid natural gas companies, which I would imagine if you went through Open Secrets and started looking at some of the most vocal people about cutting Russian natural gas off to Europe, I'll bet you those people have got some energy providers as big donors to their campaigns. That's what wars are about. That's what these wars are about. They're about pipelines. They're about energy companies cornering markets in certain places. People of Europe are going to pay a price, but so are you. Natural gas has now hit the highest point in 14 years, and I would imagine as the shortages continue in Europe, unless they regain their senses and start taking in Russian natural gas, it's going to get more scarce. The prices are going to go up even higher because, you know, if Europe's willing to pay $10 for something to a U.S. manufacturer of liquefied natural gas, you can rest assured they will get it if we're only willing to pay $5. You think these are some patriotic firms? Oh, no, we're going to stay and provide. We're going to make a lot less money, but make sure Americans are warm and have access to good, cheap energy. Hell to the no. They're going to look at world markets and say, where can we sell this to the highest bidder? And if Europe's the highest bidder, then we're going to have to start bidding against Europe, and your natural gas prices are going to go up. This is what these wars are about. Quit falling for them. Be right back.
What's a frequency? Can it the shop and subtrain?
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and every Friday we end it the same way as we chronicle the world's descent into madness on this segment called This Week on the Crazy Train. I have different segments for this part of the show. I usually segment it into, it usually starts with COVID because that craziness is not over by a long shot. I had my original and I've already covered it. The boy, 4 years old, removed from a school by police after refusing to wear a mask. This starts the insanity. We don't seem to learn our lessons. You know, school bureaucracy is still hanging on to this stuff in parts of the country. Luckily, I don't think that's here, but I will be waiting to see come this fall. You know, but one of the funniest things about the masks and everything was, you know, the first institution I thought of were the banks. These are places where you can't wear sunglasses, and I've gone into a bank before where they've made me take off my ball cap. Suddenly, they're allowing people to come in with neck gaiters pulled up to the bottoms of their eyes. Well, maybe they've realized the consequence of that.
Back now with a store that's banning customers from wearing a face mask. This clothing store in Los Angeles says the ban is aimed at reducing the risk of robbery, saying masks encourage criminals.
No.
Customers who want to wear a mask are invited to make an appointment to shop.
God. You know, and now that I think about it, is that with all the people that I see in the stores that are still wearing masks? Are you people stealing stuff? Maybe I need to start paying more attention to you people. Maybe that explains it. This is Fauci is on his way out. He is, as I've said, they need to take his passports. I think he's headed to Argentina like the rest of the people of his ilk. The mini Mingala is trying to hit the road. But he is he's getting a little bit of heat because the CDC guidance has been absolutely atrocious.
We didn't fully appreciate the magnitude of HIV back in the early 80s when I first got involved, when the first cases were recognized. And there were so many things we learned on the run.
He botched HIV so badly he got promoted. That's your federal government.
With COVID, I mean, the things that we thought we knew in the beginning turned out as the months went by to not be the case, which really forced us to adapt and to change some of our policies and recommendations. That was interpreted by many as flip-flopping or not really knowing what's going on, when it really was the evolution of the science. So one of the lessons that I hope we learn is that we've got to be prepared, we've got to be able to respond, but we've also got to be flexible.
Yeah, but do you remember, as every new dictate came out from the CDC, they essentially said, this is science. We're forcing you to stay home because science. It was dared not question. Remember that? It was the science. You couldn't dissent from it. You couldn't question it, because then you were questioning science itself, which Anthony Fauci has taken up the mantle. He is science. Isn't that interesting? Now he says, well, the science evolved. But if you questioned it at the time where they put this line in the sand and said, this is the, you will obey because this is science. So disgusting. We had to obey all of these rules that were enforced by all kinds of people because you said it was science and couldn't be questioned. And now he just comes out and says, it's not an apology. He's not apologizing. He's not saying they got anything wrong. Oh, it's just absolutely disgusting. We got a little anti-Fauci movement from Ron DeSantis channeling his inner Donald Trump. Well, except for the fact that Donald Trump refers to Anthony Fauci as a nice guy. They had a few disagreements, and Donald Trump never fired Fauci. DeSantis is a little more direct on Fauci.
And I'm just sick of seeing him. I know he says he's going to retire. Someone needs to grab that little elf and chuck him across the Potomac.
I guess we know one state that Anthony Fauci will not be retiring to, and that would be the great state of Florida. Of course, when it comes to COVID, and this is my transition into what the Democrats have been up to, and this week on the crazy train, we were treated to this little nugget.
First Lady Jill Biden tested positive again for COVID in an apparent rebound case. She had taken Paxlovid when she first tested positive last week. A spokeswoman says the First Lady is showing no symptoms. The White House says President Biden is testing negative after also having that rebound case earlier.
Oopsie, another one of those rare yet constantly reported rebounds of COVID when it comes to Paxlovid. The craziest part of the crazy train this weekend. Biden job rating rises to 44%, highest in a year. Now, you know, this is one of those situations, though, where I'm with you. I don't believe this poll for a nanosecond. Who in the hell thinks he's doing a better job now than he was, I don't know, when the last poll was 6 weeks ago or whatever? So we look at these, we go, these polls are wrong. But when he polls down around 31%, we start to believe the polls more, don't we? Yeah, we pick and choose the polls we believe. But this is just, I mean... talk about crazy. His poll ratings are getting better. This is a flashback clip in light of Joe Biden waving his magic wand to get rid of student loan debt, $10,000 to $20,000 of student loan debt for people. This is Nancy Pelosi. I believe this might have been ahead of the 2020 election. I can't remember when she said this, but this was a little bit of a flashback with Nancy Pelosi.
People think that the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not.
Whoa,
he can postpone.
What?
He can delay. but he does not have that power. That would has to be an act of Congress. And I don't even like to call it forgiveness because that implies a transgression. It's not to be forgiven. Just freeing people from those obligations. The question of who gets forgiven, to use the term of art that is out there, is a debate. Do we use whatever money there is for the broadest base of support of those with more people with even less debt or fewer people with more debt? That's a policy discussion. But the difference between the president president can't do it. So that's not even a discussion. Not everybody realizes that, but the president can only postpone, delay, but not forgive.
Yeah, well, isn't that interesting? I would just imagine, I've not heard a peep from Nancy Pelosi because I don't watch the news. I can't stand it. I'm not going to listen to that geriatric word salad her way through whatever Biden just did. But I would imagine she's changed her tune. I'm just going to guess. I talked about the elites transitioning from the Queen of America, the aging, corrupt, disgusting Queen of America, Nancy Pelosi, over to the King, the President of France. I talked about this a couple of days ago. The European leaders are at least warning their citizens that it's over. Whatever quality of life that you have enjoyed, that's all about to be gone.
What we are living through is a time of great upheaval. Firstly, because we are witnessing, and not just since this summer, but over the past few years, the end of what we might have seen as abundance. And for those who enjoyed it, it is also the end of a carefree time. Our freedom, the liberty to which we have grown accustomed to in our lives, has a price. And sometimes when we have to defend it, we have to make certain sacrifices as we fight to defend it.
So there it is. The era of abundance, according to Emmanuel Macron in France, it's over. All that good times you enjoyed, remember them fondly. You know, they're not long for this world. Here's a Dutch politician on the same thing.
The story that nobody dares to tell out loud, dares to say out loud, so let me be the one that does it. Yes, energy will be much more expensive as of now. Yes, energy was way too cheap in the last 40 years. And we've profited from it. We have created an enormous wealth at the expense of planet Earth, and so we do realize right now, at the expense of geopolitical imbalances. And both need to be repaired. And in order to repair them, we need to pay more for energy, and by the way, also for food. The two basic needs of life, food and energy, we have paid way too little for that in the last 40 years, and we need to restore that situation. Can't be done overnight, because you create too much havoc and trouble in a society, so you need to take your time. But given the current situation, we have little time.
Yeah, so they're essentially, that's European leaders saying, we're just going to boil the frog, little increases here or there, but we've been paying too little for gas, too little for food, get used to higher prices. This is the globalist plan for humanity. When I come back, we're going to kind of finish on this, or not finish, but we're going to go into some of the social justice warrior and green insanity from this past week. We'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, as we get to the caboose of the crazy train in just a second, I want to remind everybody, this weekend you're looking for somewhere to go get something good to eat. Either bring it home or head to a nice restaurant to enjoy a meal with friends and family. Make sure you check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, beers, wine. These things are made the way you want them. You go down, you pick out your toppings. Everybody gets it the way they want it. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned business. We certainly want everybody supporting our sponsors and these good locally and veteran-owned businesses. You can also order them through some of the delivery services, including takeabreakdeliveries.com. Make sure you download the YourPie app. You'll get goodies. Scan every receipt or order through the app, and you'll get points for free pizzas and pastas and desserts and all kinds of good stuff. They have specials during the week, too. They got a Thirsty Thursday, $3.14 beers. They got a great trivia night on Wednesday nights. All kinds of good stuff going on there. There's also a Warrior Wednesday on Wednesday where veterans get 15% off. So this is Your Pie up in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. Check them out. All right, let's finish up here. The green agenda is going to bring us all down. This is really what they're targeting now. COVID was just the opening act.
The U.S. has seen unprecedented storms this summer. Five so-called thousand-year storms have hit the country in just the last 5 weeks. And scientists warn climate change will make storms like these more common.
We're all going to die. That's right, we're all going to die. Strangely enough, though, not a single named hurricane this year. Huh. Isn't that interesting? I'm a big fan of the state of California as far as a geographical location. Their government is destroying it piece by piece over the past several decades, but it's a great place. I'm thinking that we may be able to pick up some cheap real estate in California. I don't know. It may take 10 or 20 years when every single person outside of the elites have left.
Today, regulators in California are expected to approve new rules that will ultimately ban the sale of gas-powered cars in the state by 2035.
This is really important for reducing climate-changing emissions. I mean, simply put, we can't address climate change without addressing transportation emissions. It's the largest source of emissions in California.
The new rules will require 35% of new cars sold by 2026 to produce zero emissions. That number climbs to 68% by 2030. And by 2035, all new cars sold in California must be free of greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay, so 2035. Start shopping for California real estate. There should be very, very few people left there. Oh, I don't know how those people are putting up with it. Here's a funky one. In the sustainability category, this may be the most bizarre story I've ever heard, yet strangely enough, because of my background in natural health and the garbage that they put into our food, I'm not entirely surprised.
And next, what do wind turbines and gummy bears have in common?
Actually, more than you might think, thanks to science. Researchers in Michigan have found a way to recycle wind turbine blades made from a composite resin. The process they've developed can break the blades down into chewy, edible products like gummy bears.
Oh, my God. Holy cow. You know, margarine is like one molecule away from plastic. I guess they're going to breach that last molecule, and you're going to be feeding your kids recycled windmill blades. Golly. I've been trying to get you to escape the medical system for almost 6 years here. I'm the Harriet Tubman of the Underground Health Railroad, and I am telling you, you need to run, not walk, with your children away from the medical establishment. This is a clinic in Philadelphia.
A lot of us have been comfortable talking about sexuality with our adolescent patients, but we don't often talk about gender. And so how do we start a conversation about talking about gender when we're talking with our adolescent patients alone and doing the rest of our
alone
kind of sexual health and mental health assessments?
So some of the language that I'm encouraging healthcare providers to integrate into their practice is simple questions with open-ended answer opportunity. So the simple question being, so Linda, you know, you're assigned female at birth and there's an F on your birth certificate. How does that fit for you? How does that feel for you? What's it like being a girl at school? What's it like being a girl in your family? What that really opens up is a conversation that can meet many patient needs, whether Linda feels very comfortable being a girl, whether Linda's worried about certain puberty changes that could be happening, as well as if Linda really identifies as Larry. You've just created an opening that says, I'm here to listen if this doesn't feel like a fit for you.
Holy cow. They're teaching this stuff in your medical schools. If I haven't convinced you to run from the medical system yet, I think my job's going to get easier and easier as the years go on. Australia, their medical system is under the same bizarre attack.
I don't care what your reason for having a hysterectomy is at 18. Go for it. Though I do know that gender-affirming care in some places in the world, it's more attention and actually gets prioritized over other hysterectomies. I had a friend in Australia who's been open about her story where she had to lie and say that she was a trans man to get a hysterectomy that saved her life.
Good Lord. Oh, my gosh. This is why you need to stay healthy. You've got to stay out of the medical system. They are making bizarre choices now. While I'm telling you to take your kids from the medical system, you need to keep protect them from the public school education system as well. Here was somebody interviewing UCLA students on just one of these man on the street things.
How many stars are on the United States flag?
132.
Yeah. 32. What ocean is on the east side of the United States?
What ocean? Can I Google it?
You guys know this.
I know this. I don't know this.
What country is the Queen of England from?
I'm not a politics guy. I ain't gonna lie. I don't know. I really don't know.
Just take a guess. Like, what country is the Queen of England from?
Europe? I don't know. I don't know. I just took a guess.
What's the capital of the United States?
There's a capital? What? Yes. Lexi?
Take a guess.
Yeah, so you get it. This is UCLA. I used to date a girl at USC. They had a bitter rivalry. I guess I need to send her that clip. That's University of California, Los Angeles. The kids don't know basic facts there on that college campus. The reason is they're not being taught those kinds of things in the schools anymore.
So I was a seventh grade civics teacher, government teacher, and she is an elementary school teacher.
What year did we get our independence?
17-something. I actually don't teach what's in our curriculum. I'm teaching children social studies that's not in our curriculum, teaching them things about how to be an anti-racist. I taught them about protesting. I taught them about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, so you can pardon those kids at UCLA for not knowing basic facts about the country or even where the Queen of England is from because they're not being taught those things in schools anymore. This is another teacher explaining what she believes her role as an educator is.
I see teaching as a very political act. When we are engaging with our students, whether it's on social justice issues or multicultural issues or culturally relevant teaching, I see that as foundational to all learning.
Yeah. So take your kids and run away from the school system as well. Looks like I've only got time for one more story. This was a fun one. A nightclub has banned staring without getting, quote, verbal consent, unquote, and hired safety officers in pink vests to police revelers. Venue also asked clubbers not to turn up if their sole purpose for the night out is to meet someone to pick up. Club 77, this is in Sydney, I guess this is Australia, said managers will call the cops if clubbers stare at others without getting their consent. Excuse me, miss, I couldn't help noticing you from across the room. Do you mind if I retreat back to the other side and stare at you for a little while? And if you wouldn't mind signing this piece of paper to allow me to stare so the police don't roust me. Oh, my gosh. That is this week on the Crazy Train. Hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. I'll see you all on Monday.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.